Our reading this morning is taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14, 7 to 14. Now he told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, "When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this person,' and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." He said also to the man who had invited him, "When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just." The word of the Lord for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
You may be seated.
All right, well, welcome again. As I said, my name's Travis. We are going through a series on hospitality in the Christian life. We're bouncing around to several different passages to get a look at what does hospitality look like in the life of God's people across the ages, across different styles of teaching and thinking. And we've been calling this series A Life of Welcome because we've been talking about how hospitality is not just a specialized skill, not just a one-off thing, but it's actually a way of life. It's a posture for how we approach others. It's living a life of welcome towards them wherever we are, with whatever we have, for whoever they may be. It's essentially a willingness to engage in the needs, the cares of their lives, even if we're at odds. It's a call to recognize the basic humanity in others and not to stay walled off because we have differences. And so we've been talking about, how do we define hospitality? What does it look like from the Christian perspective? How is it bigger than we think, deeper than we think? How is it also even smaller than we think? And what is the need and importance of it? What's the power of it? If you've missed some of those things, you can catch our links from the previous weeks. But now we're going to start a couple of weeks on talking about the extent of hospitality. How far does it really go? Where should we draw the lines? Where do I stop? Where do I have boundaries? Where do I lean in? Well, this week we're going to look through Luke's gospel at how Jesus and his welcome and his hospitality goes so far as to actually change the fundamental rules of welcome and hospitality in a culture, in any culture, in our culture. And he changes the rules such that they extend far beyond what you expect or what you understand, and that if you actually follow him in those things, it's radical. It requires a fundamental change to how your society works, to how you relate to each other, to what the norms are, to what the proper expectations are. But there's actually great freedom in that. It seems more difficult, more impossible than we can think, but there's actually a depth to it for how far it goes that's so important to us. And to get at that, I want to look at three things this morning. I want to look at the social background to dinners like this, where Jesus was in that time, because he's speaking into a context. And if we don't understand that context, we're not quite going to hear exactly the depth of what he's saying. Second, I want to talk about Jesus' radical approach to welcome in that context. And finally, I want to look at where we get the power to go that far, to go the distance. So again, the social background to dinners like this, Jesus' radical approach to welcome in that context, and the power to go as far as Jesus calls us to go. But before we get into that, let me invite us to pray as we ask God to be with us in our time together. God, we come in maybe with many weights on our shoulders, maybe with much joy in our heart, maybe anticipation of many things to come. We don't know what the future will be like. We know what some of our past is, and maybe some of that is difficult. Maybe there are ways that we have felt unwelcome in our past, that we feel others are unwelcome with us now, or that we worry that we will be unwelcome in the days, hours to come, maybe even at the end of this service. And so, God, we ask that you would come now, and that through your word you would welcome us, that you would show us how you are the one who ultimately welcomes us and gives us to welcome others, that we don't stand here alone at any point in time, but that you always go with us. You are always the one who would welcome us in. So I pray that you would do that for these hearts this morning, that they would know your welcome, that they would know it anew if they've always known it, that they would know it deeper if they've never known it, that they would start to know it, that they would step into the streams of your water and mercy that would be refreshing for a soul that feels parched. God, I pray that you would do these things now in your Son's name and by your Holy Spirit, we pray. Amen. Well, if you have a Bible, please keep it open, or if you don't, there should be one in the pew in front of you. We're going to go back through the text a little bit together this morning. There is a lot in these verses. There's so much more than I can get to here in our time today, and I'd love to go into it more, but we're going to have to focus on some things, and what I want to start by focusing on is this social background to what this meal context is like that Jesus is talking about. You might look at these verses, 7 through 14, and think, thanks, Jesus. That's some nice advice. I appreciate not feeling embarrassed in front of other people. It seems nice to reach out to others and be generous. Thanks. That's a nice little fortune cookie kind of word for me. But, when we start to see the cultural expectations that bang up against what Jesus is calling people to do here, we see that this is not just advice. It's something that's meant to change your whole life and your whole approach to welcome. And so what's this background that Jesus is speaking against? Well, one commentator, Joel Green, says there are really two big issues at stake in eating together in the ancient Mediterranean world that you have to know about to understand what Jesus is doing here. The first is that he says you can't possibly overstate the importance of your social status or the social group that you belong to for eating together. You can't say enough about how important that was, about how critical that was to what it meant to eat together or not eat together. He says your status at that time was based on society's perception of your relative honor, value, or prestige. You belonged to a group, you belonged to a class because of how important you were, for whatever reason, for your background, for your money, for your skills, for your trade, for your connection to people. You had status because of those things, and that status set you apart from other people. It either set you with this group or that group, and you belonged to one or the other. And those rules, that status would go along with rules for how you did everything, how you interacted, all the way down to how you ate together. For example, Green says, where you sat or where you were assigned or allowed to sit at a meal like this, in relation to the host, the person who welcomed you, who invited you into their house, was a public advertisement of your status. So if you're sitting closest to the head of the table, you are someone with more power, status, influence, and importance. If you are at the lowest end of the table, you have less power, status, and importance. You didn't sit like we sit. If you go to a meal with someone at a restaurant, there's a big group of you, you think, I'm going to need to go to the bathroom at some point. I'm not sitting in the middle. Or I don't want to sit next to that person because I don't want to talk about those things. Or I'd like to be by the window where I can see. We think about what benefits us. When you sit down, you do this intrinsically. You don't even think about it. You think, nope, not in the middle. And I want to sit by that person, by the window. You just do it. It's on autopilot. In the same way, it was on autopilot for them gathering around a table to see people and think, that person has more status than me. They're a little bit more important. I should sit here. I should make room. They should sit there. They're not as important as me. I better sit up here. I don't want to embarrass them. All these calculations that we do like this, they were also doing like that. It was just a different system. But your seat at a table, if you're at a dinner party, was determined by how worthy of welcome you are perceived to be, how important you are, your class, your standing. So you couldn't just sit wherever you wanted. You had to sit according to your status. A better seat for a better person. If you sat out of order, like Jesus said, you would be moved. And you would be shamed when that person who had more status than you showed up and you would have to move down. So there's a stress and a significance to getting this right. There's an importance to your status that you don't embarrass yourself and lose status in the process by sitting in the wrong place. Do you feel stressed already? I felt stressed going through this week. All these things. This is a lot of stress. This was a social system that had stress. But not only was it important for your status to dictate where you sat, your status dictated if you even got an invite to the table. Green says, because meals were used to publicize and reinforce the social hierarchy, invitations to meals were themselves carefully considered so as to allow only people whose presence would either enhance or at least preserve your social position. Okay, so that means that you were only invited if your relative value matched their relative value. There would be little small steps in between, but there can't be this great chasm. There can't be this huge divide. There has to be a parity between these things. You're always considering who belongs with my group. Whose group do I belong in? Because if you missed that, your status would change with that. You would start to be considered. You would start to get the kinds of invitations, the kind of treatment, the kind of welcome or unwelcome that would go along with that social group. You could lose access to the kind of acceptance that you longed for, the kind of belonging that you longed for. You'd have less welcome if you weren't careful about who you invited to be in your community. Now, some of our students here this morning know this game better than any of us adults, although adults, you probably remember a certain point in time when what friend group you had, who you associated with, who you spent recess or lunch with, who you hung out with after school, who you went and did things with on the weekend, that determined your status. You were part of the cool kids, the popular group, or you were not. And if someone from that popular group was seen hanging out with you, whispers start floating around. Should they really be part of the popular group? Do you really belong? If you spend time with the wrong person at the wrong time and get seen, it changes how people think about you. Spend even one lunch with the wrong person, all of a sudden you're on the outs. The ancient social world was much more like that. Your social status meant a lot, and it was very fragile. You had to always be thinking about it, always be cultivating it. It was a very stressful thing. And so that's the first aspect of what Jesus is talking about. There are these carefully considered, maintained social groups that you had to be really thoughtful to not fall out of or to not get associated with. But there is also not just that heated context for whether you can come, where you sit, but a concept of reciprocity. Joel Green explains that there was also this gift and obligation system tied to every single person in the Roman Empire, all the way from the emperor in Rome down, he says, to the child in the most distant province. Everyone was tied into this intricate web of social relations, where apart from the most limited kinds of relationships, family relationships and only the best friends, that gifts, that invitations were never free. But they were given or received with strings attached. And this gift and obligation system didn't just stop in certain settings, but it extended into everything, even to eating together. So to accept an invitation to eat together was to obligate yourself to extend a similar invitation to the person who had invited you. It was meant to be positive, mutually reinforcing that they blessed and welcomed your status, you recognized theirs, and vice versa, that round and round it went, and you helped each other stay afloat within your class and your social structure. It kept you both in good shape, but that meant that you didn't step outside your status. You didn't step into a different group of people. It meant that powerful and privileged people, as Green says, would not ordinarily think to invite the poor to their meals because this would do one of two things that they thought were not a good idea. The first is that it would possibly threaten their social status. You would pass up on opportunities to eat with those people who would, again, reconfirm that you belong in this group, you are worthy of this kind of honor and recognition. You would pass on that dinner to eat with someone who could only, at best, lower your status, someone who wasn't part of that group. You would miss both the opportunity to be reaffirmed and you would pass on that to have your status lowered. It would certainly mean a fall if you're in one of these more important groups. But the flip side of that coin is that it could also create embarrassment for the poorer person, because this expectation of gift and obligation extended to everyone, no matter how rich or poor you were. And so if you invited them to come to your table and you are rich, they can't reciprocate in the same way. They can't put the same fancy things on the table that you can, so they would be required by social protocols to decline that invitation. So best case, a rich person invites a poor person and they're embarrassed. Worst case is that not only they're embarrassed, but you also lose your social status when you try to welcome someone who doesn't belong in your group. This was not something people wanted or thought about. It didn't make sense. What Jesus was asking them to do does not make sense to them. This was not nice advice. This was, what are you talking about? It's into this social structure that Jesus calls for something very different, something that if they followed, it would, as Green explains, that it would totally tear down the categories of insiders and outsiders, that it would remove any distinction between rich and poor. It would be dramatic, like a cultural revolution, a social revolution. It would change all the rules and expectations. You would be in social freefall. You wouldn't know where to draw the lines anymore. You wouldn't know who is in and who is out. You don't know if you belong, if you're welcome, if you have a sense of acceptance, safety, freedom. His approach was a real challenge. It was a cultural revolution. And so what was that approach? I want to talk about it here in our second point, Jesus' radical approach to welcome. It comes out in these two pictures of Luke chapter 14 in verses 7 through 11 in that parable that he tells, and verses 12 through 14. There are really two primary things that Jesus' approach is about that is so revolutionary, that's so countercultural to what people would expect. And the two things that Jesus brings out in these twin pictures is that his welcome looks like doing this. It looks like making room for others above you, verses 7 through 11, to give up status for others. And secondly, it looks like giving without any expectation of return of the same. That's verses 12 through 14. Those two approaches threatened everything that everyone knew about social interactions at that time. And I want to look at them a little bit closer so we understand what Jesus is calling us to, this thing that's so radical that would tear everything down. Why would he do that? Is it just for fun? Is he just enjoying stressing people out? Does he just not like the system? Or is there something deeper that he's trying to get at? Is there a welcome that's not showing up in the way that society welcomed people that Jesus says, this is not what I have in mind? This is not the heart of God for welcoming others. That's what he's trying to unearth here. And so we've got to dig into what Jesus is saying. So going back through verses 7 through 11, essentially what Jesus is calling you to do and saying, don't just take the best seat, is he's calling you to make room for others above you, to save space for there to be someone more important, more welcome than you. And to make not just a little room, but a lot, he tells them, verse 10, take the worst seat. Sit all the way at the end, farthest away from the host. Show that you think you're not all that important. Put yourself in a position of someone who least deserves to be there. Someone who might say, I don't know how I got invited to this. I think I'm in the wrong place. I shouldn't be here. Relate to other people, Jesus is saying, like that. Relate to social groups like that. Relate to your work like that. Relate to your family, your friends, your neighbors like that. As someone who is at the very bottom. We don't like that. We'll talk more about how we and they didn't like that, but that is a difficult thing. It's a radical approach to hospitality. To not just try to hold on to what's yours. That's what we are trying to do. That's what their system's trying to do. We're trying to hold on to welcome, to our status as someone who is good, to be seen by other people as someone who is worth their time, someone who's worth making eye contact with, speaking with, hanging out with, someone who's important. It's important to hold tightly to that welcome. But that's not Jesus' approach. He says, don't do that. Rather, live like you are not and are not looking to be the most important or the most welcome person in the room. That's where real welcome comes from. When you live like you are not looking to be and you are not the most important, the most welcome person in the room. Not in an insincere way, just to get what you want, but genuinely. You genuinely want to make room for others to be more honored, more welcomed, more important than you. I mean, it may be, verse 10, that you would end up being the most honored, that you put yourself in the lowest position, but someone blesses you with recognition and love and acceptance. But your hope is not for those things. Your hope is that you get to see someone else enjoy those things, that you get to watch someone else be blessed in that way. Your hope is for a world that is bigger than you and your reputation. And to live like that requires a radically different view of your social world. It requires believing and acting like there are many, many people who have much more honor, brilliance, importance, worth than I have, and I want to make room for them. I want to honor and welcome them. This would be unfathomable to Jesus' audience. Willingly put yourself in the position of someone who maybe shouldn't be there? Put your own welcome at risk? What are you talking about, Jesus? I have to look out for me. This was nonsense to them. Putting yourself last does not make sense in the eyes of that culture. And it doesn't really make sense in our culture either. It's hard for us to accept because we are also, though it is very different, part of a culture that is just continually on this hamster wheel of running after, chasing after welcome and security and acceptance. We're trying to protect the welcome that we have so we don't lose it. You may not think that's the case, but if we look at how we interact with each other, we see that it's right there just below the surface. We're often on edge about, will you welcome me as much or as well as I think I should be welcomed? Or what will happen if I welcome someone who isn't part of my group, who doesn't vote the way I vote, who doesn't live where I live, who doesn't have the kinds of things that I have? What will happen if I extend welcome to them? What's going to happen? What will it be like? I need to be more on guard. I need to make sure that I talk to you in a certain specific way, that you treat me in a certain specific way. We are part of why we are so hostile and divided in our countries. We are on edge about this question of, will we be welcomed or not? Will I be received or not? Will I be treated with honor and dignity or not? That's part of what we are fighting about in the culture right now. It's part of what we are so tense about. We're in a similar place that this culture was. We're stressed about how we'll be received and worrying about holding on to our place, about having enough welcome. So it's scary to hear Jesus call us to let go of worrying about your place, and to instead make room for someone else to be more welcomed, more well-treated than you are. We hear that and we can think, maybe I am gonna end up not being welcomed anymore. Maybe I am gonna be mistreated, dismissed, overlooked. Maybe I'm gonna get kicked down to a lower circle again and again and again until ultimately I'm just by myself. Sad, alone, disappointed. But the reality is, and what Jesus shows us in his own life, is that when we follow his way, even if it takes us to the very bottom, when you stop just focusing on yourselves, we discover that though we've been anxiously seeking the welcome of other people, when you get to that bottom place, when you've stopped focusing on yourself, when you've desired to see others lifted up, to see others get that welcome, to see them shine in that light, when you do that, you realize you've actually become the host that you were hoping someone else would be for you. Because you have been giving away time and again places of honor to other people. You've been opting out of that yourself, stepping back from it so someone else might step into that place. You are making space for them to be welcomed. You have become the host that you would hope to be. You have become the person who gives welcome. You're not on the string. You're not waiting for circumstances to be right, hoping that someone will see you in just the right way. You have become the person that gets to welcome others like that. You've become the person that gets to hold out welcome to others, not being concerned whether you will or you won't receive it. We feel like we're falling by making room for others, but we're actually rising to a new status as a host. That's what hosts do. We give away. You make room for others to come in. This is how far gospel welcome goes. It lets you lose all of your personal welcome, all of your personal status and acceptance, to see that in doing that, in giving that away, you had far more welcome than you ever really understand. More than if you fought for it tooth and nail every day to make sure you were in the right status or group, had the right seat at the table. You get more by being open-handed than by closing your hands and holding on tightly. That's the first radical approach of Jesus. To make room for others is actually to make room, ultimately, for your own heart to be a host. To not just be a participant at the table, but to be a host. And that requires such a different worldview. But Jesus also goes further. He doesn't stop and say, just make room. Because we could do that within a certain group. You could feel that amongst people who are in your same career track, who are in the same school as you, who are in your friend group, in your family group. You can take that lowest seat at the table. Jesus says, hold on. We're not stopping at doors closed. You do that in this room. We're stopping at doors open. You do that everywhere. And that's when the bottom really drops out on us, because Jesus' approach goes further in verses 12 through 14 than we would really like it to go. It makes us deeply uncomfortable. It is meant to make you uncomfortable. If you read it and you're comfortable, you're probably not seeing it just right. It should make us a little bit anxious. Is he calls us to give without any expectation of receiving back. If you do that enough times, you eventually become the person who has to receive, and that, if we are used to power and control and taking care of ourselves, is a completely nerve-wracking thing. To be in need is not something that people with control, power, money like. We like to be in control, we like to have power, and we like to have money to do the things we want to do. But Jesus calls us to give without expectation to receive back. That means that we give to those who can't welcome you like you can welcome them. That's what that means. It doesn't mean that they might at some other time when they want to. It means they literally cannot give you what you give them. They don't have what you have. We can broaden that out beyond finances. They don't have the personality you have. They don't have the kindness you have. They don't have the patience that you have. They don't have the generosity of spirit that you have. They don't have the maturity that you have. Jesus says, welcome them. Show them welcome. And that means when we relate to other people, it is not meant to be purely reciprocal. That we only give our welcome to those people we know who will be kind to us in return. To those people who would be generous to us in return. They won't be able to give you back what you give them. You will take a loss in order to welcome like this. You will be moving closer to the very people that you are seeking to give to, because you are giving up more of what you have, more of what belongs to that status and circle, that power, to be closer to those that you would welcome. And likewise, to do that genuinely, just like with Jesus' first call, requires a very different point of view. It requires you to believe and to act like your welcome actually has the power to make someone into something that they are not now. That your ability to say a kind word to someone who is always bitter to you has the power to make them into something that they are not now. your power to welcome someone who is prejudiced against you, who says microaggressions against you all the time, unwittingly, unknowingly. Your welcome to them has the power to make them something that they are not now. Your power to welcome someone who always demeans you just for who you are, who always dismisses what you've done for them, who walks over it as if it was nothing. Your power to welcome them has the ability to make them someone that they are not now. We have to live like we have the ability to buy something with our welcome that money cannot buy. And that is real, genuine heart change. We have to live like welcome is about more than merely holding on to what we have. To give in this kind of way Jesus talks about, when I don't expect to get anything back in return, I don't even expect to get a smile from you. I smile at you and I get dead shark eyes, right? I'm polite to you. I'm on hold with call waiting for whatever company that has done me wrong and I'm trying to get this fixed. I get nothing but meanness. My welcome to you is not going to be returned. I have to live like I'm holding on to something more than just what I can get for me. This would also be unfathomable to that society, that you do this with everyone, that you erode your ability to have power and complete control in all circumstances. That doesn't mean you have no boundaries. Jesus at plenty of times said, no, I can't do more than that today. I won't do more than that today. But look at how open-handed his life was towards people. How engaged he was with them. But no one else was like that. It was unfathomable at that time, and it's maybe even harder in our materialistic society here in the West today. End up with less in my life when the world is already hard, when I've already had a difficult time as it is? Have less to make me feel secure about my future? Not be sure of who's going to take care of me if I don't take care of me? It's unfathomable to us too. It is scary to us too. This is a radical approach, and we'll see who in a minute will actually take care of you in the midst of those things. But Jesus' call is to ask a different question if we're going to lean into biblical welcome. It's not who will take care of me, but who will take care of them. That's what 12 through 14 are about. It's a who will take care of them question. If they are bitter and heartbroken and sad and crusty, who will take care of them? Who will take care of them? It's a call to become the host. That's what these verses are about, a call to become the host. The host is saying, who will take care of them? That's what a host does. Who will take care of them? And I'm not standing here like this is an easy thing to do. This is hard. This is hard for me. I'm not talking to you as if it's easy and you just need to go do it because I figured it out. I don't know how to do this easily. This is a struggle. Welcome that goes this far is incredibly hard. It's meant to have sharp edges. We don't need to soften the edges and pretend like it's easy. So how do we have the power to actually do this, to go the distance? And to get into our third point here, the power to go the distance, as we've already said in our series numerous times, is also true here, that we have power for this kind of welcome not from in here. The ability to do what Jesus calls you to and living a life of gospel welcome cannot, does not come from within. It only comes from the outside. And that's part of what Jesus is getting at in verse 11. If you try to lift yourself up to a higher place, even out of good intentions, you're sitting at this table in the ancient time and you're thinking, if I can move one seat this way, closer to the head of the table, I can make room for more people behind me. I can make more space for others. By me stepping up, I can make more room for them. I can do great things for them. I can be a more important person who welcomes more important people. But Jesus is saying, ultimately, it won't work. You will end up falling short. It will become about you. When your power gets threatened, you will maintain your power instead of helping those around you. You can't elevate yourself even for good. You have to be welcomed. It has to be given from the outside. Someone has to come to you and say, you are seated too low. Please come sit up here. He doesn't say that you sit in the right place and the person says, recognize, perfectly done, I applaud you, now move up one seat. It says they find you where you are when you have lowered yourself. You have to come to the table for this kind of welcome, for this kind of power, not with your status, not with your achievement, not with your knowing the rules. You come and receive power for this kind of welcome. You get moved up into that kind of place with your nothing. When you're sitting at the lowest seat, you have nothing in that social circle. When you're outside the doors and you've not been invited to the dinner, you have nothing. What do the people bring that Jesus says you are to welcome in this passage? They bring class? Nothing. It's pretty good for Presbyterians. Nicely done. They bring nothing. You have to show up for the power for this as the humble, those who know they are poor, who know they are crippled, lame, and blind to the welcome of God, and just receive it. That's how you get the power for this. That's how you're lifted up, not through your status, but through your lack of status, through your absolutely not having the ability to do this right now, through the humility to say, Jesus, I am empty-handed here, but would you welcome me anyway? I'm late. I'm $50 short. I don't have the right clothes on. I don't know how to say the right things. I have bad manners. Would you welcome me anyway? That's where change happens in our lives. It's exactly like Jesus says, the humble get lifted up. When we know we have little to offer, but we're welcomed anyway, that changes our ability to welcome others. That opens the doors for us to be able to become the host. When we are welcomed anyway, despite having nothing that we bring, which is exactly what Jesus did for us in his life and his death at the cross. In his life, he welcomed the spiritually poor, the physically poor, crippled, as his friends. He welcomed them and spent time with them despite their lack of power. He didn't say, anyone that can do miracles, come hang out with me. Anyone that can perfectly keep the law, come hang out with me. He was near, he was eating, he was spending time with sinners and tax collectors. He spent all day with people who were broken and diseased and had their bodies and their lives falling apart. He made room for them. He made room for them above himself. Jesus, our conviction as Christians is that he is truly God and truly man. That means that he is the one who made the stars and the heavens. He stretches out all things. He can do anything that he wants without blinking. And yet he comes and he is born into poverty and rejection and oppression amongst his own people. He makes room for his own people above himself. The one who has no one above him makes room for everyone above him. Moving even lower still to die a horrible death on the cross as the lowest of the low. You couldn't get lower than being crucified publicly in the Roman world. That's the seat at the table that Jesus takes, way down here. Though he was King of Kings and seated in the heavens. He takes the seat of the utterly shameful and outcast as the sufferer for all the sins of all of his broken, blind people, so that we might be lifted up and seated at his table, so that the doors might be opened up and we might come in without status, without gifting, without any of the right things. He gave to us when we couldn't give back. That's what his life is. That's what the cross is. Jesus giving to you when you can't give back. He is the one who takes care of you. He is the host that welcomes you in, who gives you the power to let go of all the frantic trying to maintain my status and privilege and power and access. Because you've been welcomed to his table, because the doors are open for you to come in, not because you had the status, not because you had yourself together, not because you are a nice, good person, but for the poor and the crippled and the broken and the blind to come in. If you are in that place, doors are open for you. But you have to know yourself as the humbled to come in. That's who the doors are open to. Those who know, I can't do this. I can't handle this. I'm not ready for this. You are in the perfect place. The seat is ready for you. Because the whole reason Jesus came was to make room for you above himself, to lift you up. He came to honor your powerlessness with his power. This is how we have power for this kind of welcome, not in ourselves, not being strong, not doing all the right things, by being empty-handed, by bringing your nothing. That's where you get the power for this. So if you are here today and you think, this whole sermon series has been hard, this is harder, I don't want to do this, I don't know how to do this, you are in the perfect position to receive the power and grace of Jesus Christ to do this, because you have to be open-handed. You have to know you don't have it in you. If you think, got this, I figured it out, nailed it, be careful. You may move down lower. And God is always gracious to you, not abandoning you, not being capricious and mean-spirited with you. But the intent is always to give you something more, to let you open up your hands, to let go of this frantic race to try and control my acceptance and welcome, and to let you become a person who welcomes, who can create room above you, who can make space for others, who wants to see other people enjoy the blessings and welcome that you would also want to enjoy, because Jesus has welcomed you like that, because you have that, because he has gone there for you and he will go there with you. That's how we have power for this. So how do we drive this home a little bit more this week? How do we make this more practical for you? I want to encourage you to do two things as we go more practically, to make room and to give. First, to make room. When you're in a situation with other people this week, a social situation, maybe you're uncomfortable with others. Maybe you are uncomfortable right now, or you're going to be uncomfortable as soon as this is done and people try to talk to you. Or you are in a situation where you're in conflict with someone else. You know they don't like you. You know they've done something to hurt you. Remind yourself to look for a way to make room for them, to be welcomed, to be honored, because of how Jesus has welcomed you, because the welcome comes to those who don't deserve it, not those who do. Those who don't deserve to be in that social circle, not those who do. Ask God to help you make room for someone with just a gesture, just a word. If you are so angry at someone you could bite their head off, just start by in your heart saying, "May God be gracious to you." You don't have to go all the way down the line. You have to be best friends with them tomorrow. That's unrealistic. Start with a small step. What is a small way that God can give you to welcome someone with a gesture, a gift, an invitation? Maybe they receive it or maybe they don't. But God gives you a heart to make room for them to be a host. A host doesn't always have someone receive their invitation. Not everybody can always make it. Not everybody chooses to come. That's not the point. The point is you get to be the host. So ask God to help him, or to help you make room in your heart for others. Ask him, if you don't know him, to make room in your heart for him, for this kind of open-handed welcome, to let you just receive, to let yourself be the humble, to let yourself be the broken, to own that takes extreme courage in our society to say, yep, that's me. Not the good person, not the person you should want to spend time with, not the great personality, but just me. But Jesus has made room that you might be seated above him. He took the lowest of the low place so that whatever they think of you, he thinks so much more. Ask him to make room in your heart for his welcome. And finally, not just make room, but give. Give what they don't have. The call of verses 12 to 14 is to give, what did we say, what they don't have. So if you run into someone this week who is rude, someone who drives recklessly in front of you, someone who is hurtful, annoying, difficult, give what they don't have. Give the kindness that they're maybe not showing you. Give like your welcome has power to go beyond what you are experiencing with them, to give them something that they don't have now, to make them someone that they are not now. Give what they don't have. How often do we feel like, you're going to be mean to me? Whoo, okay. I'm going to quietly plan. I'm going to wait weeks at a time, and then you will know. That's what we do, right? We want to get even. Right? God gives us the ability to be a host. A host doesn't have to get even. You can just hold out an extra seat. What if we lived like this? What if we gave what people don't have? What if we weren't concerned for what we got back, but we were just comfortable giving? I imagine this would be a very different place. I imagine the greater area would be a very different place. What if? Let's pray. We'd like to leave a little time for you to talk to God in your hearts about some of the things that we've just been speaking about, maybe thanking him that he would make room for you like this. Or confessing the ways that really you want to bite back. You want to reciprocate. You want to move yourself up. You don't want to be open-handed. Or just ask God to help you know his welcome that would let you go and be welcoming like this. Let's pray. God, thank you that you welcome us like this, that we can bring our nothing and you open the doors, that we can be the poor, the broken, the totally needy, and you want to invite us in. So would you, in all the ways that we are those things, invite us in as we prepare to come to your table and commune with you. In your name we pray, amen.